Well, what you eat does impact our climate. A recent study shows that we are eating differently, and it's leading to lower emissions of food-related climate warming gases. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Claire Bassey. She's a senior analyst and sustainability research lead with the group Third Economy. It's a consulting firm, and they work to empower companies and investors to make more sustainable decisions. I want to learn a little more about Third Economy as well. She has a BS in biological engineering. Her master's degree is in environment resources. And the study we'll talk about with her was completed while Claire was a graduate student at the UW, the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin, as part of her thesis research. So, and it's an interesting study, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions as we move along. What do you want to know about how what we eat affects climate change? Have you changed your diet in the last few years because of your carbon footprint, or maybe for some other reason? Love to have you part of the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Claire Bassey, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today to talk about your research.
Hi, great to be here.
How'd you get interested in sustainability research?
I think I've always been interested kind of in the outdoors and in some of the social and environmental components of sustainability, but I think I got involved in some of the technical components of it just through school and through studying kind of different analytical frameworks to account for greenhouse gas emissions.
When I think about what you talked about, what your research study showed or looked at, which was eating patterns, what inspired you to select that topic for your research?
Yeah, I think when it comes to kind of greenhouse gas emissions and climate change, sometimes the topic can feel like there's not a lot of consumer-driven or individual-driven impact a person can make. I think food is one of those areas where it's responsible for a large part of our global emissions. And also just as an individual, everybody eats, everybody consumes food, everybody has decisions they make with food. So I think that dynamic of having some individual decision-making is an interesting topic to see how people can make a difference in that area.
Yeah, food, that whole production and everything else, what is it, about 25% it amounts to in terms of emissions?
Yeah, the most recent IPCC report says about 42% of emissions come from our food system, and about 80% of those emissions are from the farm stage, so food production itself. And then some of the other emissions are from cooking or transportation, packaging. But the biggest bulk is from food production.
Well, in your research, you do say that it's changed, that eating habits have changed over time, which obviously leads to data sets. Talk about the data you used and how it was compiled.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can define what people eat. There's a lot of different databases out there. There's some national models that are kind of looking at what goods are being traded, coming in and coming out. And the database I used was from individual survey data. It's called NAINS. It's a national health survey that takes place. Every couple of years, they survey a large population that kind of represents the U.S., and it takes individual data. People give a 24-hour recall of what they ate in the last 24 hours. So what's nice about this database is it's kind of real people saying what they actually consumed, not like a large model. And it's one of the main databases that's used for a lot of U.S. health statistics. The participants also go to get a physical appointment, and that's where we derive a lot of our trends in kind of U.S. health patterns as well.
Yeah, and I kind of like that those data sets because they're asking people, I think, a reasonable question. What did you eat in the last 24 hours, which is something most of us, I think, can recall with, you know, rather than, you know, what did you eat last May or something. I think the chances for a decent response are probably pretty good.
Yeah, there's always, I mean, whenever it's kind of self-reported, there, you know, and it's also just a subset of the U.S. population, but it's definitely our most robust. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of people that participate every year. And over 50,000 people were in my study over the time period. So it's a pretty large sample size. So given that, I think it's a good kind of representative sample of some of the trends we would expect the broader population to have as well.
And so you were provided with those data from 50,000 or whatever, however many people, and then you analyzed them in your, used your own methods for that. So you have to be a good statistician as well.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of data. You had to learn computer programming to solve that problem.
So, well, what did you, were there some, what did you find in the data, and were there any surprises?
Yeah, I think there's, were definitely some, what I was kind of happy with was a lot of kind of pleasant surprises. So, really one of the biggest takeaways is that the greenhouse gas emissions in the diet, the study period I was looking at was 2002 to 2015, 2018, bad to remember. But the greenhouse gases dropped by 35%, which is pretty tremendous when we think about how significant our food system impacts are in global greenhouse gas emissions. So that alone was a huge positive finding. And I also just looked at different demographic variables. So gender, race, ethnicity, age groups, and across all the demographic variables I looked at, greenhouse gases were declining as well. So that was also a really positive trend to see kind of a systemic change across a lot of different ways you can slice and dice different population subgroups.
Yeah, well, some people might be a little confused, but when you say it declined 35%, what is that? What are you really saying there?
So I'm saying, I guess when we look at the total carbon footprint of our diet, 35% is really, really tremendous. It's on the same order of magnitude that our U.S. electric grid has changed from renewable energy production. And we think about some of these other kind of infrastructure changes and how much they're contributing to climate change or technology changes. But our food system changes are really up there as well. And it's really driven by consumer choices. So my study was kind of normalized for different changes in our agriculture production systems. It was really driven by how consumer behaviors and people really eating less greenhouse gas intensive foods has led to so much emission reduction over time.
And when you're talking about greenhouse gas emission foods, I think beef was one that has a big impact on our carbon footprint.
Yes, definitely. So of the kind of emission reduction observed, about 50% of that came from one commodity, which is beef. And beef alone is responsible for nearly half of the emissions of our diet. So just that one commodity is really what's driving our footprint overall. So when we talk about kind of levers of change for emissions reduction, consuming just a little bit less beef can really be one of the larger levers for change when we think about greenhouse gas emission reduction in the diet.
So the demographic factors that you looked at, I also thought were interesting. Income levels was one that I found kind of interesting. Talk about differences among income levels within that.
Yeah, so I looked at three different income groups, and greenhouse gas emissions reduced along all of those income groups as well. I think when we think about food patterns and income groups, there's been a lot of research to date about differences because of access and affordability to a lot of particular food items. You often see a lot of differences in what different income groups eat. But in terms of greenhouse gas emissions reductions, I would say of the demographic variables I looked at, there was kind of the least difference in trends between income groups. Genders had one of the biggest differences between their emission rates, but income groups were relatively similar, mostly because both income groups were eating a relatively similar amount of beef. So just that commodity kind of keeps people bundled together, but all income groups were eating less beef over the last 15 years.
They were all eating less beef, and the income group that was eating probably the most was the highest income group, I'm guessing. I can't remember now, but I think that's right.
Yeah, it fluctuated some. There were time periods where the highest income group was eating a bit more beef, but the biggest difference happened between genders, where men typically ate quite a bit more beef than women, even when we normalize for caloric intake and things like that.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we're going to continue our discussion with Claire Bassey, and I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts on this as we move along today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. What questions do you have about what we eat and how it affects climate change? I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've changed and want to talk about that as we move along, too. Again, the number 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guest, Claire Bassey. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking about some research on the relationship between the food we eat and our carbon footprint. With us, Claire Bassey. She's a senior analyst and sustainability research lead with the organization Third Economy. Third Economy is a consulting firm empowering companies and investors to make more sustainable decisions. Claire holds a BS in biological engineering and a master's in environment and resources from the Nelson Institute at UW-Madison. The study we're talking about was completed while she was a graduate student in the Nelson Institute, and it was part of her thesis work. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about the relationship between what you eat and the environment? Do you eat less beef, perhaps, because of climate concerns? You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call just to begin this segment. Shireen in La Crosse, thank you for calling. What's on your mind? Hi, Shireen, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I was just so happy to see that your guest was able to do research on that about 15 years ago when I was writing my thesis. I really had to push to get them to allow me something on environmental education. They just didn't think that was worth researching. And so seeing the research that your guest is doing just makes me so happy that that's, you know, really important work that they're looking at.
Oh, Shireen, thanks for calling. Claire, comment on that.
Yeah, thanks so much. I think it is exciting to see how much momentum there's been in sustainability and environmental research. I know as a student, there was like a very thriving department and a lot of resources and dedication. So it's exciting to hear that there's a lot of support for research, now, even though there's also a big problem to solve for all the research to be done. But thank you so much for doing the work you've done and setting a path forward for other young students like myself.
Yeah, thanks, Shireen. Appreciate it. Let's go to Tom in Southwest Wisconsin. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for your show today, Larry.
Sure.
Got a couple questions for your researcher there. I'm sorry I missed your name. I'm actually in the combine. I just finished my harvesting. So I wondered if her research took into account the relatively new, although not really new, practices in farming and food production with cover crops and carbon sequestration and no-till farming, which reduces our environmental footprint. Whether or not a person believes in man-made climate change, it still affects our bottom line, our soil health, and all these things are leading to an improvement in our food production and making it more sustainable. And I wonder if your researcher did any research on that, or when her research actually, what the data points were and time frame on her research.
Okay, Tom, thanks a lot. Comment, Claire?
Yeah, so with the study we were kind of just speaking about with the trends, I think that was mostly looking at consumer-driven choices, but the emission factors of the foods that people eat are based on research studies that study greenhouse gas emissions of growing different crops or livestock. In terms of the changes in agriculture practices, like cover crops and some of the things you mentioned, I also did like kind of separate research looking at if we were to change corn production, which is the largest commodity we produce as a country, what kind of changes in corn production could be drivers of impact in our production stages? And with that research, definitely one of the biggest changes people can make is cover crops, especially because of the other co-benefits, not just in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, but some of the things you mentioned like soil health and erosion. So definitely a huge field of research there, and there's a lot of great studies out there that are demonstrating and showing the benefit there. So exciting to hear that you're excited about those practices as well.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. And again, he mentioned the data points, and again, the data, you might just quickly review that for those who may be joining us late.
Yeah, so the data I used for what people eat was from a database called NAINS, and it looked at survey data of what people ate in the last 24 hours. And the database I use for the greenhouse gas emission factors, that one's called Data Field. It's from a professor out of the University of Michigan. And what he did is he looked at thousands of life cycle assessment studies. Life cycle assessment is when you look at basically the carbon footprint of one product. So you could have the life cycle assessment of potatoes, the life cycle assessment of peas, the life cycle assessment of beef. And he looked at a lot of those studies that were representative of growing patterns around the U.S. to get average emission factors for different commodities. So I would map what people ate to those emission factors of the commodities to get the carbon footprint of someone's diet.
Tom, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. And good to hear that you're finishing up on your harvest and your work in the field. Thank you, Tom. Another Tom, this one in Sparta, has a comment or question. Let's go there. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good afternoon. I've heard a lot of, talk about, if you change your diet from meat, but I'd like to just point out the dairy industry in Wisconsin and, how much milk is being subsidized and produced by these large, huge factory farms and our insatiable appetite for milk and cheese. The word sustainable to me has always been kind of a misnomer because I honestly don't think anything that we do can be truly sustainable. It can be less non-sustainable, and it can have less impacts, and it can have logical efficiencies, and we're moving towards that direction. But I think using the word sustainable is kind of a tribal thing, and I think we really have to look at what that word actually means, especially when it comes to these huge factory farms that have been scattered all over Wisconsin, the impact on our water and our land and our environment from mass producing, these huge amounts of over-subsidized and overly produced dairy products.
Claire, a comment.
Yeah, I think you raise a lot of really great points. I like to caution around the word sustainability as well and really be specific, especially my study, which was just about greenhouse gas emissions. Sometimes people can really quickly make ties to sustainability, but that also can involve a lot of other cultural and social and other environmental factors that aren't related just to greenhouse gas emissions. When it comes to milk and dairy, I also think it's a really good point because in my study, the results found that there were five commodities that contributed to 75% of the emissions in the U.S. diet. So that was beef, milk and dairy, which was the second highest commodity, chicken and poultry, eggs and pork. So all of those products accounted for 75% of the emissions across the diet. So yeah, milk and dairy is definitely on the table as a large driver of our impact as well.
So something like, so we're looking at what, let's take potatoes, for example. Where would potatoes fall in that?
So potatoes are an interesting one because they're something we eat a lot of, but they don't necessarily have that high of a greenhouse gas footprint. So they fall a lot further down the list. I don't know their rank exactly. They would be somewhat higher still just since we consume them in terms of quantity. We consume a lot of potatoes. But they're further down the list in terms of a main driver of our impact. Because all of the rest of the commodities, there's about like 400 I grouped and categorized things into. So the remaining 395 made up 25% of the diet. So potatoes would be one small piece in that.
Yeah.
Kind of remaining percentage.
And earlier you mentioned race and ethnicity. I'm just curious about when it comes to what people eat and their carbon footprint, did you find any differences when it came to race or ethnicity?
There were differences. Some of the main differences I saw were in the trends themselves. Black women had the largest or the lowest emissions in their diet, and young men had the largest rate of reduction. So they were changing the quickest in the study. So those were a couple of the key demographic variables I saw. But I really just wanted to include those variables because I think when we start to talk about decisions and food choices, I think it's important to include those social factors. But I think there's a lot more research to be done. Like, I'm not a social scientist, so there's a lot more research to be done that would maybe explain why we're seeing some of those different trends.
Yeah, yeah. Aaron in Peshtigo, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. You've touched on one of my hot-button issues here. I am a perennial defender of cattle. My favorite phrase is, it's not the cow, it's the how. I'm a 100% grass-fed beef farmer, and there is a massive difference between the way that managed grazed cattle, like I practice and many of my fellow farmers across the state, the impact that they have versus cattle raised in confinement, where the feed is brought to them and the manure is spread out. When cattle are grazing on well-managed pastures, those grasses are actually sequestering carbon. And my farm was part of a UW-Madison study that demonstrated how effectively carbon is sequestered in these pasture soils. So there's not an equivalency here that all beef, and all dairy for that matter, grazing dairies, straight grass milk dairies, like some of the products you can buy from Organic Valley, come from grazed cattle. And so it's not the cow, it's the how. The whole cattle thing to me is a red herring. Those five products you listed, the guests listed off as being big carbon-producing foods, are also some of the most highly nutritious and densely nutritiously packed foods we have. So there's more to the story than just trying to make an across-the-board equivalency of a pound of beef or a pound of egg is worth the same as a pound of rice or a pound of lettuce type thing.
So, yeah, Aaron, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. I think you make some good, interesting points. Comment, Claire?
Yeah, I think you make good points as well. I think our food system is very complex, and I think the type of study I did is really looking at really large average trends, and there's a lot of other nuances and considerations and all the different production methods that there are. So this is really to get a bird's eye view of some of the trends we're seeing in our greenhouse gas emissions. But there's a lot of complexity, and I consume beef, and I will continue to do so. I think people's food choices are individual to them, and there's a lot of factors about how you can source things and consume things responsibly. I think the purpose of my study was to show some of the trends over time and gained insights from that. But in terms of how people interact with the food choices they make, that is always up to an individual, and it's a complex system, so it's hard to make broad sweeping statements. Definitely.
Yeah, Aaron raised some good points there, I thought. Grace in New Glarus, your turn. Hi, Grace.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Claire. What a great follow-up to Aaron, because I have I brought up some of the same issues with Jill, is that, you know, there's a big difference between pasture-raised animals and CAFO-raised animals, both in terms of their impact on the environment, the restoration of perennial native pastures, moving away from corn and soy and some other crops. And it would be very interesting to me. My husband and I are very active members of the Farmers Union down here. Wisconsin Farmers Union has their Dairy Together programs and their grazing apprenticeship programs, and there are other entities that they work with to teach people how to produce food in more sustainable and regenerative manner, and that's safer for people to eat. I mean, these chemicals that get fed to animals in CAFOs and the chemicals that are used for cleaning the facilities that get down into our water are very bad for us overall. And that's, you know, those are things that have to be thought about too.
I think you're making some interesting points here, Grace. Comment, Claire.
Yeah, I think definitely there are so many health and social and environmental factors all tied in our food system. And there's also so much variation in how food can be produced. And there are many ways to produce food responsibly. And there's a lot of work to be done to kind of change some of those national and systemic issues in our food system to celebrate strong farmer practices and improve people's health and improve the environmental impact of a lot of our food production. And when I think about, I just think there's a lot of opportunity, and it's nice to hear other people call in that are wanting to be responsible producers as well and are in that fight for change there. So
yeah, thanks a lot, Grace. Appreciate it. Terry in Lake Geneva, we'll go to you. Hi, Terry.
How you doing, Larry?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon here. We're a small dairy that makes cheese down here in Lake Geneva, and we milk 12 cows. And the cows are on grass. So that was my question, is when you're looking at the carbon footprint of cattle, are you also looking at what they're eating? Because I use 12, and they are all on grass. My neighbor has 2,600, and there isn't a blade of grass in the entire farm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the greenhouse gas emission factors I used what would represent an average production in the U.S. So there were studies that included grass-fed, and there were studies that didn't, and we used the average of what the most common commodity in the U.S. is that people are consuming. But there's huge margins of error on all the other types of small producers and things that aren't captured in the average value on a scale that big. A national average is, you know, hard to pinpoint. It's very much a moving target, and there's a lot of variation depending on how people produce food, which I think is ultimately what's important, is just to connect to where food comes from and learn more about it and engage with it and choose foods that have lower footprints and foods that also, beyond greenhouse gases, have other factors that you care about, whether it's taste or community or how seasonal or local it is, or a lot of other factors can lead to food choices, not just greenhouse gas emissions. So thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you very much. How do people get a look at your study?
What was that?
How do people, how could people see your study and view the results of your study? Do you have a, well, you have a thesis, but did you get some publications out of that?
Yeah. I did get some publications out of it. It was published last year in an environmental science journal. And I think one of the main kind of outcomes that I like to tell people about is just that we are capable of transformation and our food system is transforming. I think there's a lot of movement for things that aren't just a large corporate production of different agriculture commodities that are kind of driving some of these negative impacts. I think consumers are waking up. I think producers are waking up, and I think it's creating a change that's kind of already underway, and it's exciting to see. When we think about greenhouse gases, I think people often see a lot of negative changes happening around or negative news, sad news, but it's happy to know that there's positive change happening too.
Your organization that you work for now, and you're the senior analyst and sustainability research lead with Third Economy. Tell us about Third Economy.
Yeah, Third Economy is a small consulting firm. We advise our clients on things like their carbon footprint, developing a strategy to manage different environmental and social impacts in their business. And then we also advise investors on how to incorporate different environmental and social factors into their investment decision making to help kind of move the economy towards more opportunities and more capital flow towards projects that have positive impacts.
Yeah. So without mentioning a specific organization or business, could you just give an example of a business that you might have worked with or a kind of business that you might have worked with?
Yeah, we work across all kinds of different industries. We've worked with some of the largest beef producers in the world. We've worked with different software and IT service companies. We've also worked with different financial service and bank companies, more on the investment side. So we support all different industries, small companies, larger companies. And what we really try and do is come into their place, learn about their business, and help them see how they can make positive changes happen.
And the business is Third Economy. The results of the paper, if you've got, if you can leave that with Jill Nadeau, we can post that up on our page, on the Larry Mueller Show page. So if people want to see it, they can go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry and go to today's date, and we will post, in fact, it's already on. It's already there. So if you want to take a look at Claire's work, certainly you can. And I'm sure you guys are online with your organization, Third Economy, as well. And people can, if you type in Third Economy into your search engine, it's going to pop up, I'm pretty sure. Right, Claire?
Yes, it will.
I want to thank you so much for taking time. We've got a nice discussion going here, and I appreciate your time and talking with us about your work. Thank you, Claire.
Yeah, thank you.
Claire Bassey, our guest, senior analyst and sustainability research lead with the group Third Economy, talking about her master's research on how a changing U.S. diet is affecting climate change. And if you want to take a closer look at that, certainly go to our page, the ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and go to today's date. We've already got it up. And while you're there, you can grab that casserole recipe from our previous guest, Beatrice. Tomorrow, Garden Talk, advice on selecting tall plants for inside spaces and suggestions on easy-to-care-for houseplants. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.